You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
What do you think is normally on that wall behind Scottie Pippen? Because he had lots of bottles of bourbon.
Other bottles. I feel like
it's just like a converted liquor cabinet.
Wait, Billy, you think that was he in his house there?
I don't know. He took down like family photos or books and it's like, let's put all the bourbon on the wall.
I think that was set up for, I think it was probably at their, right?
Corporate office?
Yeah. Yes.
There was like some marketing office or something there where they set up like, I think, I don't know.
Do you think those are all full bottles of bourbon or like, you ever seen the thing where they like in commercials? Yeah, no, like they, like, I think in commercials, like where they like they try and show a pancake with syrup, they put like motor oil on it or something like that to make it look like more glossy. Like they do things in commercials all the time to make something look like it's not.
In pizza commercials, they use glue to actually like separate the pizza. It's like glue strands to make it look white and cheesy.
Really? Mm-hmm. So they glue together pieces of pizza, and when you pull them apart, that's what makes it look like, look at this pizza ripping apart.
So
cheesy.
Yeah.
I think it'd have a pancake with motor oil based on like look alone.
Right. Oh, okay. Huh.
You meaning it would pass, you're saying? Like if motor oil was on your pancake, unbeknownst to you, you would probably still eat it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you.
Right. Yeah. So in this scenario, you're eating a pancake with motor oil by mistake.
I'm just saying, like, I would think it's syrup.
Right, that's exactly. All.
Right.
Yeah.
I would take a bite, realize it's motor oil, and probably stop eating it.
Well, I don't know, though, because if let's say I'm looking, right? And it's like, choose one or two, like you're at the eye doctor, and one is the motor oil and one is the syrup. Obviously, they're doing it with the motor oil because it looks more appetizing, right? So why not give it a whirl? Maybe see if it tastes as good as it looks.
You never know.
So this is back to our earlier conversation about judging foods based off appearance. We're like,
I think if it said motor oil underneath, I still might, just based on the way that it's presented.
This makes absolutely no sense.
No, he's.
I gotta be honest with you. It's one of those situations where I just started talking without an actual plan of where we were going with it, and it seemed like things were slowing down a bit. Uh-huh. So I'm like, let's just see if there's any more of this motor oil pancake.
Everyone in the Zoom has a tell for when they're uncomfortable that a conversation has stopped going.
Oh, wow.
Yours is, Chris always does the, Great Parade or Any Well. Like, there's no one I know who's more uncomfortable with a beat of silence than Chris Cody.
Yeah.
But everyone's got to tell.
And he fills it. Chris Cody will fill it.
He does. What is Roy's tell? I don't think he has one.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poker face over here.
I don't think I have one either.
You do like a lean off to the side a little bit.
Wow. Look at this guy studying all of us.
Yeah.
I probably get quieter.
Why do we all hate silence? Silence is okay.
Because it's radio.
I don't.
It's not air. Radio. It's no,
we're
saying
not on
we're
radio.
No longer on the radio.
No, I'm saying
I think that's
general.
Where you arrived at a great place in a relationship where the silence is comfortable. You should be comfortable. We should all be comfortable with silence.
Yeah.
We're not on the radio.
Yeah, but we've been doing radio for so long that we're kind of used to filling in silences.
Right.
You know, that lasts for more than 3 seconds.
So, Stugatz, when you're at home with your wife, you don't mind there being silence? You don't
what
think...
What do I crave silence?
Jesus.
What do you think the proper number of people present in a silent moment is before it turns uncomfortable? Like, do you think it's more uncomfortable between two people or if there's eight people and there's silence?
I think we should test this out. I think we should do a full minute right now on air. No one talks.
But we have to look at each other.
We all have to be unmuted.
I feel like that's
and
easy
look at
though,
each other.
Right? It's harder
see who
when
breaks
it's people
first.
In the same
a full
place.
Minute. All right, ready? I'm going to time
so
it.
Well, no. Just so we're clear here, a full minute, we're staring at each other.
Yes, unmuted, everybody.
No
Chris
one's
Cody.
Allowed to talk.
Right. Not even a full minute. Let's see how long we can go, guys.
All right.
Let's all okay, just ready? Look at each other and see who breaks. Chris, are you paying attention?
Five.
I'll be looking
four.
At Tony.
Look at the Zoom, Stugatz. You'll see all of us.
Oh.
All right.
All right, who has the birds chirping? Who's chirping? Whose birds are chirping?
Whittingham, we didn't even make it a full minute. That was 42 seconds, and those are my birds, by the way.
It felt like forever.
That was really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
that
you have pet birds, or those are birds outside?
I wanted to make a joke so many times. Like, it needed a joke, that silence. It just needed something.
What were you thinking?
I don't know.
Like, let's explore what was going through your head.
I think I was just going to say, like, good braid or something.
Right.
That's really all I have in those moments.
One in the chamber.
Rated. We have to put that in the podcast and see how many people message us and say that something was wrong with the audio for 40 seconds.
You get really the background mad. Noise in your neighborhood.
The podcast app that I use trims silences. I wonder if it just like will go from one bit of it to the next without
what
like,
podcast
like,
app?
Fancy
is this?
App.
It's an app called Overcast.
Right.
And
it trims silences.
It has several speed settings. One of them is called Smart Speed. Right. It basically gets rid of all the silences. So like if there's like 3 second bit of a zip and you're on to the next.
Yeah, but silences are a big part of. You need a little pause in radio.
Pause,
some silence.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
I mean,
you?
They're like there's
silence
so actually. Right. So I turn it off when I listen to this show or when I listen to this show as a listener. So I turned off that setting. You can customize it per podcast. So I would do that. But like for the most part, we're just trying to like get information from a podcast. First off, I have moved to 1.5 times speed, so I'm there now, and I'm on smart speed as well. So I'm kind of like I'm mowing through like a 40-minute podcast in like 28 minutes or something like that, and it's a more efficient experience.
1.5 is a good speed though. I love 1.5.
Yeah,
I'm a 1.2 person.
Yeah. I'm matriculating my way up. I think I can get to 2 at some point.
Wait, but I have a question. 1.5, it's not fast enough? Like, it doesn't dilute the product at all?
No.
Again, so, like, if the show is an entertainment experience, I won't do it. Like, if you're trying, but, like, if it's, like, an information-based thing, or it's, like, you know, like, the New York Times Daily, I'm just trying to get the news, like, you know, I'll listen to it. It doesn't dilute it for me. And also, like, this app allows you to do it incrementally. So I was at, like, 1.12, 1.25, 1.3, and now I'm at 1.5. So I've kind of, like, my ears have slowly adjusted. I actually did listen to this show for a period at speed, and for a while, when I would listen to you talk at normal speed, it sounded like you were slurring and drunk. Like, you talking normally. I was so used to hearing it in my ears at speed that I thought you were, like your speech had slowed.
Chris, it sounds like you're going at 1.5 speed right now.
Yeah.
You're really hauling ass
down.
Right now. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
God.
So I sounded drunk.
Yeah.
You always sound drunk, though.
It's yeah, as opposed to now. Yeah.
Thank you. I am drunk now.
Scottie Pippen's digits, wherever you get alcohol.
Well, not wherever you get it.
Yeah, it seems to be only in Chicago.
Mariano's and Jewel was what I heard.
Is
it available online? Probably, right? Go find Scottie Pippen's digits.
Yeah.
He was a lovely guest, even though he... So, Stu Gatz, when he went back to you for the Durant thing...
I was scared.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's time for a self-check-in. How's your social battery right now? Is it drained or bursting with energy? Similar to how a battery stores energy before eventually running out, individuals with a social battery may feel a need to recharge or withdraw from social situations after a certain amount of time. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with work or social gatherings. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
Hey, Chris, how are you? I like the way you spell your name.
Oh, well, it's wrong, so.
Oh.
I have this name despite being 100% Colombian, and we think along the way it was completely mangled by someone who doesn't know how to spell.
That's hilarious. My name means black in Polish.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah. Jessica, who's on our Zoom, her last name means sour cream in some Eastern European language.
Shut up.
Yeah.
In Czech, Russian, and Ukrainian, like all the Slavic languages, probably Polish too.
You're joking, right?
No, I'm serious. No, it's like, I hate it. It's super embarrassing. Like,
oh,
why?
Stop it.
Are you kidding? It's like, it means sour cream? That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, that's amazing.
I guess it's better than like mustard, because that sounds weird too, but.
But you know what's cool about sour cream? Sour cream is the thing now that everybody uses if you want to be a little healthier as like a substitute and stuff that still tastes good. Do you know what I mean? So
that's true.
I think it's having a moment, and that's awesome.
I hate to do this, and I don't. We just Julio Jones you. We're going to use all of that. You're live on the air, Lindsay Zarniak, with no warning. We may have committed a federal crime here, but that is where we're beginning. So thank you for being on with us. And I don't know the history of your name, actually. And you came through. Yeah, your story came through Miami, but I don't know. I don't actually know your family story.
Oh, first of all, thank you. No, it's great to see you, Dan. I was saying that Zarniak means black in Polish. And so like when I was growing up and we would have to wait, like my dad always tells a story when he would put our name in for a reservation or something, he would sometimes put black because it took them forever to, you know, spell and figure out how to say Zarniak. So there's that. But no, my family story, I mean, my dad was a journalist, which is probably where he covered sports. And he started at USA Today. He was doing horse racing and then NFL and some other sports. And that's probably, I think, where I caught that bug, like through osmosis. And they're in Virginia. And I still I love to talk to my dad about stuff still in the business, which is, he's sort of a sounding board and similar to yourself.
Did they try to dissuade you from this as a career path just because of the degree of difficulty?
No, do you know what's funny is I did the Olympics as a summer intern for USA Today in Atlanta. And I remember, I vividly remember being in the newsroom, and one of the writers that my dad worked with, he was like, Lindsay, if you never want to grow up, this is what you want to do sports. And at that time, I didn't know that that's what I for sure wanted to do was news or reporting or whatever. But no, my dad was always really open and would always take me to events, and he would always talk about what he did. But no, they didn't dissuade me. I mean, I think sometimes now they're like, what are you doing?
Lindsay, when did you know?
Honestly, it was when I was at James Madison University and we had a practicum. So we had this class where we had to take every single role that it would require to produce a show. And it was there, honestly, because it was that was the first time that I chose that over the parties. You know, I was like, I just want to be working on this project. And when I had the role of host for whatever couple days that was, I had a co-host, and I was also obsessed with MTV If someone had said, what did you want to do? I wanted to be Martha Quinn. I was hooked. I loved the way that watching music videos made me feel, and I could only watch it at my grandparents' house because we didn't have cable. And there was just, I loved it. I was obsessed. I could watch it for hours. And so when I was doing that show at JMU, we just had so much fun. And there was this banter and interaction, and I sucked. I was awful. When I go back and watch those tapes that I have on VHS, it's so embarrassing. But that was what lit it up for me. I was like, I need to do, like, if I could do this, if there was some version of this, this would not be work, you know? And so that's when the passion, I think, really first kind of lit me up. But my path was weird. Like, I started in news, and then I had a random twist that led me to Miami. And that's what it was. I was with some guys that worked at my news station in Jacksonville. They knew that I liked racing, and they were like, you want to come with us to Daytona? You can just help us out, carry some equipment. I was like, yeah, sure. So I went, and we were waiting to interview the driver who won. And actually, it was Greg Biffle. And I was waiting to interview him, and these guys from Miami struck up a conversation, and they were from NBC. And we were just all waiting for the same interview. And before we left, they were like, hey, you know, you seem to know your stuff. We have an opening. The woman who was doing this job left to go to Washington. And they were like, and we need a reporter and a host for this show we called Finns TV. And that was it. And so I went to Miami, but it was a part-time gig. Like, it was that for me at that time, it was such a risk. It was like such an exciting risk that I really wanted to take. But I remember I kind of had to, like, I talked to my dad a lot about it. There was like a lot of inner circle conversation. Cause I'm at the moment, I'm like, do I leave this news reporting job and take a part-time job in Miami where I'm covering the Miami Dolphins off the field? And to me, that sounded like a dream, because it was like the storytelling that I loved. But and the guys at WTVJ, the NBC in Miami, were like, we will coach you, we will help you with whatever you need, but you will be our third sportscaster. And like, to be honest, like that, I was like, holy crap. Like, I like, really, you know, because that going from news reporting to that, it was really different, but it was such a great move.
How rare were you as a woman with expertise in motorsports? How alone were you?
Super alone. I mean, I could probably, like, at that time, I could have named the three other people that I knew that were women, but they were super, it was a great group. Like, we really, I think, helped each other, or at least, like, could lean on each other. But when I started, I was also doing some work for the Speed Channel. And that was because I had met this group of like producers and folks that work for the Speed Channel when I was down on like a long weekend in outside Daytona. And I met them, and we struck up a conversation anyway. So that was random. But yeah, it was wild. Like, and I remember the first time I walked into a garage, and it was the ARCA series, which is like one of the grassroots series that feeds into NASCAR. And I was so intimidated because, as you know, it's like the garage, especially back then, it's all men. They're all working on a car. I did not know a lot about race cars at all. And so I remember there was this one time I walked in. We all have this credential that's a hard card. So it's the same credential you use every weekend when you're covering racing. And I was so nervous. And I've like got the cojones to walk up to this like engine, you know, this lead engine mechanic. And I'm like, hey, you know, here I am, like little blonde gal, you know, like, and I'm like, hey, how's the chassis? Like, I don't even know what I was asking. And he's like, and he laughed at me, and he looked down. He's like, hey, nice picture on my credential. And I was like, oh, thanks. And I looked down, and someone had taken a Sharpie and drawn a mustache on my face, on my credential. And I had been walking around for like 2 days with a mustache. So anyway, so it was hard, but it was, I had to ask a million questions, you know, and figure it out. And people, for the most part, were very helpful, and I love it.
I'm wondering, when you talk about that fear of getting fired, if there was ever like a fear of breaking the unwritten rules of journalism as a young woman covering sports, because that's something that I was kind of met with head on working at Sports Illustrated. You get away with much less when you're a young, enthusiastic woman than I think young, enthusiastic men can get away with.
Like, and when you mean that, yeah, tell me more, like, give me an example of that, because I think we're exactly on the same page. It's true.
Yeah. So I think if you're an enthusiastic, like, young man working in sports, you're not really questioned. But when you're an enthusiastic young woman, it's like, well, does she like the athletes? Is she romantically interested in them? Is she too enthusiastic about them? Like, why does she like this so much? Women aren't supposed to like this. And then there's like this constant self-consciousness you have when you're covering certain events that, okay, maybe I need to like repress my feelings and my enthusiasm and be just stone cold, like straight, not showing any emotion, because I don't want it to be misinterpreted by the older men in the room.
Yeah, definitely. There are times too that I remember a moment in Miami where there were two quarterbacks who were like, they were playing a joke on me, and like one of them got me to turn around intentionally at the time where the other guy had his pants around his ankles, right? And it was funny. Obviously, like in that moment, that's a scenario where I'm like, okay, what, like, because you don't want anyone to think that like you're engaged in that, right? But I think that in terms of showing like too much enthusiasm, yeah, that's something that can cross your minds. But honestly, that's also like, it's also, I think, just natural, like the difference in men and women when you're a journalist and being perceived, like sometimes I do feel like I will be perceived as you're pushy, right? Or you're pushy with an idea, or you're pushy with a concept that you think, right?
I would have never gotten that impression from looking at you, that you had this fear roiling inside you. It was very, and was that roiling inside of you when you're at ESPN? When you're on, you've arrived at whatever the destination is, right? You come through Miami, yeah. You go, the degree of difficulty on what you're doing is pretty hard, right? It's not just a woman in sports, but it's going through NASCAR and they might be, or it's going through racing. They might be Southern gentlemen, but they might be some cavemen too. So you're coming and you get to ESPN, and that at the time, it's not quite the golden age of ESPN, but it's still a destination. So it's still roiling within you there?
Well, and it wasn't like roiling. It's not like roiling, like it's something that always bothers me. It's just, you know what I mean? It's just like there. And I think it's also something that you use as fuel, right? That's kind of what I mean by it. And I think, so what was weird is when I got to ESPN, I mean, I had people that were telling me not to do it and I really wanted to do it. Like I had people that were, I mean, I'm not afraid to say it. They were like, you'll be part of a hamster wheel. You'll be part of a, like, you're going to get there. It's a definite system that you've got to work yourself into. But I was so pumped about the opportunity. And I had someone there who had said to me, hey, just get here and we are going to figure out this spot for you. But we see you on SportsCenter. We're excited about you being there. And I know that once you go through the system here, it's going to end like in a really great way, whatever. That was the conversation I had that was like, I want to do this and I want to be there because I had the faith that it would work, right? But when I first got there, so I walked away from, I left NBC4 in Washington. And when I was there, I mean, George Michael hired me. And I feel like when I say that, I have to preface that it's like George Michael, the sportscaster.
Well, this is the greatest thing on her resume, I don't know how old you were, but this was a time where the only rival to ESPN was this man's damn sports machine.
It was great.
This guy was as famous as any sportscaster in America. And he had the weekly highlights and he had a damn machine that I believe Lorenzo thought was an actual machine where he pressed things and the highlights would play. And so, you were on that show very young.
Yes. And I went there from Miami. So the funny thing was the woman, Andrea, who I replaced in Miami, had gone to work for George at the sports machine. I found out years later, George saw me covering racing because his son-in-law watched racing. So he actually saw me on the Speed Channel, which is why he called me to come there after Andrea left and then he needed a replacement. I wanted to show you this. I showed Stu Gotts this. This is what are, I kept this pad of paper because it's the way we had to chart football games.
Sports machine. Like oh my God. That is
it. You had to chart it. It was literally like you had to do this. And this is what we turned in. He would assign every one of us a game on Sundays. We would all have to chart it that exact way. We would have to staple it together and we would turn it in after. And that's what our editors cut from like that. I will never have another experience like in a professional setting like that, the way that he ran it. It was such a well-oiled machine. And for local news at the time, it was like unreal. Wait, where was I? So anyway, you're a rising star.
We all got thrown off by George Michael. Everyone swooned,
and it was lovely time through nostalgia. It was a giant machine. I don't know how to explain it to you, but he would go over and he'd press it, and then there'd be highlights. And Lindsay Zarniak goes from Miami. You're still in your early 20s here, right? This is a big national giant job, and you're now like starlet sports media person.
But I was doing Sports Machine with him and I was also just, you know, the local sports anchor. But my point with that is he was like, Zarniak, you come here. If this is going to be everything you've ever imagined, he basically was like, I'm going to show you the ropes. I'm going to show you the right way. And at first I had turned that job down because I was scared, but then I got some sense and I begged him for it back and he said yes. And so I go there and that's what he did. Like it was a boot camp. I mean, I had to read every word of the sports section before I got in there because there would be a quiz. And I remember the first time that he called me over and was like, Zarniak, what's the energy or the injury that so-and-so has. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't read like literally the back page of the paper that morning. And so that was like a small victory. So it was that kind of thing. Like he would like quiz you. But he also, the way that he laid out introductions for me, that mattered. Like the way that he set me up to have a relationship, if I carried it out the correct way with the coaches and the GMs and the, you know, like ownership groups in that town, that made such a difference. And like that, looking back, I'm like, wow, like that is, that's what I want to do for people. However, in the relatable way that I can do it to help with people in their careers, because it really, it changed everything. And it put me in a position where I was able to really learn, you know, and like, and storytell and do it in a great way and get this access. And so anyway, my point with that is in DC, it was like this amazing job. I was also back home, the town, that city. I love that city. It was like a warm hug everywhere I went, you know, it's like, it must be like what Miami is like for you. Damn, right. Like, it was just awesome. So when I left there, I was so excited to go to ESPN, but it was also like, okay, when I got to ESPN, me and Melvin were about to be married in October. Whoops. And we moved there 3 months before we're getting married, and I'm working overnights. He's now a reporter for MSNBC and he's flying everywhere. Like, and I'm dying because I'm in suburban Connecticut and I'm like, what have I done? I'm working overnights. Like I'm doing Highlight Express, which no one's seeing, which really doesn't matter. But like at that point it did. Cause I'm like, I left this amazing experience and now I don't know what's going on. But what happened is obviously I stuck it out. I got this opportunity to fill in on the 9 a.m. show on SportsCenter a couple times. And it was like, that changed everything. And it was like, once that started to happen, it was this amazing experience that was like, oh my God, you have this national playground. But also it was a different experience because I was around a lot of women for the first time. So that was a really great experience overall. But I feel like also, you know, when you get to that level, you're figuring out, okay, it was an adrenaline thing. It's like at ESPN for me doing SportsCenter, you're finding out what shows you're hosting because you're clicking on the calendar that comes up in the company email for everyone's calendar to see. And the other thing is you're seeing everyone's calendar. So like, that's the thing. You're like, oh, that person's hosting. You know what I mean? So I found out that quickly, like there was a culture there that like everyone's very much in the same boat and you're waiting to find out sort of how you're doing and what shows you have. And that was a great lesson. And like, here's why you don't pay attention to that stuff and just keep your head down. Like me and Melvin talk about it all the time because he experienced the same stuff in, you know, doing cable news for the first time. You just freaking do your job. You do you keep your head down and you, that all you can do is control that. And you cannot pay attention to all that other stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to do that, especially in a business that has this much vanity. I don't know the story of how you ended at ESPN.
Oh, it's a story that is, I think that the decision was timing. It really was timing at the end of it. But no, I'll tell you, I was anchoring the 6 o'clock. And when I got there, I was there for 6 years. And so I was doing SportsCenter and I had a slew of co-hosts and I was lucky that like they were all really fun people. And then for a while it was me and John Anderson and he's amazing. He is just one of my favorite people to work with. He's so funny, but it's like a dry funny, which is just so much fun. And he would bring me peppermint patties every night on set right before we started, which was great. And then anyway, I started solo hosting the 6, and the 6 was great because when I was doing it, I loved that they were starting this big initiative of SportsCenter on the road. You remember that? It was like, we were the show that happened before a lot of big events. And that's where I really realized, I was like, this is my happy place. Like I love live TV and I love being live, like right, you know, doing a pre-show or whatever, just like the drama and anticipation, you know, and we found ourselves outside the queue, you know, and hopping back and forth to San Francisco for the NBA finals. And so that was really great. But anyway, so it was in the summer of 2016, right? Because I was about to have my daughter in November. So I just, I got this feeling like something, it just felt like, I was like, huh, like, you know, when sometimes you're doing your work and there's certain stuff that they're talking about that they would normally be planning. And those conversations for whatever reason kind of weren't happening. So I started to ask like, what's going on? And then also that kind of coincided with me needing to figure out what stuff looked like when I was coming back from after I had my daughter. So I started asking questions, just like, what's our plan? And that's when I found out, like, actually they might be trying to make a schedule switch. So that just led to a series of meetings, which turned out to be, all right, actually we want to put this new show, which was Mike and Jamel, in the 6 p.m. time slot, because that's the slot that makes sense. And so it was, they were just simply needing to make a schedule switch, and they wanted me to make a switch to go to the weekends, which, you know, that SportsCenter on the weekends is a great show. I mean, it's a highly, highly rated show. It gets a ton of viewers. It's a great group. But honestly, like at that moment, it was the way I found out. And if I hadn't, I felt honestly, like after thinking about it for a long time and after, you know, talking to my little circle, I was like, that's really effed up. You know, like that's not the choice that I would make to go move to that show at the moment when I'm about to have a child and my husband works on during the week. And like, I've never, you know, like, look, I'll be really candid with you. Like, I've always struggled with being open about the balance, right, between like professional and life. Like, I feel like for so long, I would have always like put forward, no, like professionally, like that's what I would lead with, you know? But like, so I guess what I mean in like English terms is I always choose, no, I'll be the person that'll do that versus like, I always get uncomfortable being like, no, I want to go to be with my family. Like that makes me just, because of what I've been through, I think in the industry, it's just, you learn like that maybe that's not looked at so good. But anyway, so I decided that instead of doing that, that I was going to not do that. And so that was my choice. It was like, you either do the weekends or that's it. And so it was a hard decision. It was a really hard decision. But to their credit, like there was a manager there who I loved, who came down to my town, you know, and it's like, let's go to coffee and talk about this and see, like, this is really what we want you to do. So they were really open about trying to make it work, but it was not the right move for me. So that was it. So
she hosts the SRX Racing Series on CBS. She has a sports and music podcast called The Artist and the Athlete. We want to talk to her about that, but she's got to get out of here. On this note, just real quick, you leave, you mentioned something about your parents wondering why you're still doing this. Were you joking or were you serious? Do they think that you're doing the wrong thing?
No. I was joking. No, they love it. They do love it. So no, that was a total joke. In fact, I mean, they really enjoy it. Of course, like they enjoy, you know, they loved it when I was in DC. Like that's the thing. That was the hard thing. Like, I think there are times now that they're like, hey, come back to DC and do what you're doing. You know what I mean? So no, they've always been really supportive and really great. But I think it's like, it's one of those things now, what's so fun is to be able to have these opportunities to really do stuff that makes you, you know, like you get to a point in your career and it's like, wow, like this is really awesome. Like this kind of work is what I really want to do. So that's why it's super fun. And by the way, Ricky Williams was singing your praises. He said something to me when I did the podcast, it was him and Be Real for The Artist and the Athlete. And he was like, he was talking about when he decided to leave and to stop playing. And he was like, Levitard was one of the only people that was really on my side. And he was like, Levitard has this really unique view of what an athlete should be. And he said, and that's why I think he and I are such good friends. Like, what did he mean? And I was like, the next time I can ask you that, I want to ask, because I thought that was so cool and so profound.
Oh, I just thought he was ahead of his time in terms of being able to represent and advocate for some things, and just the fame machine chewed him up. But I really thought that he could have used his power in a way that wouldn't have gotten him vilified and would have gotten him. I mean, he was just on with us last week and he said, I would have been a hero if I had played just now. I would be speaking on behalf of so many people. And he was just ahead of his time. But they're wrapping us up, Lindsay. They've been telling us they're yelling at us. They're saying we've gone too long. So thank you.
Well, you got all deep. You try to get all deep. That's what happened.
Yeah, I know. That's my fault. I'm the grief eater. Thank you for being on with us. I was looking to see, what, do her parents really hate what she does for a living? But you fouled it all
up. Think she should be a doctor or a lawyer? Or no.
You were really exploring that space.
I know. See you later, Lindsay. Thank you for being on with us.
Bye, guys. Thanks, y'all.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.